Hey y'all, this is Dr. Mike, the Redneck Dentist. I'm going to check my audio meters, as always, just to make sure we're not getting any of those ugly red peaks. Hey, I just want to tell you guys a little something. First of all, I kind of want to warn you. It is Christmas cookie day here at the homestead on the hill. And that means our kids and our grandkids are here right in the room next door making tons of Christmas cookies, which also means we have a couple extra dogs here and a lot of noise. So if you hear some strange sounds, just understand there's some delicious Christmas cookies being made in the next room and it's full of people. But today, this is kind of a special edition. We're going to cover a couple things here about Real Liberty Media and what's going on with that. Just a tiny bit. I did want to let you guys all know, I'm pretty sure I talked to Vinny earlier, and he would like to have me host a show tomorrow. So that will be a special show. It probably won't be a full hour. He just wants to cover some stuff, and we're going to figure out the logistics of that. It'll be the hour before Hal comes on, so an hour before Behind the Woodshed. And let me see, I got to do the math here. That would be 2 p.m. Eastern time, right? If I'm wrong, somebody correct me. I think Hal goes on at noon, which is 3 p.m. Eastern. So this special show with Vincent Easley will be tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern. I just want to tell you guys, for some reason, I am so anxious today about this show, and I don't know what it is, but, you know, when you sit down to go live, and you kind of, you know, click on the icons to get things going, even though I kind of do it before, I do like a little warm-up before, and then I listen to the recording. And, yeah, it looks like everything's working still, man. When it's like, okay, going live, it kind of freaks you out a little bit. At least it does me. So, and kind of on that note, I just want to tell you, Grimner has done such an awesome job. I had no idea how much stuff goes on behind these live shows and getting them done, doing them live, getting the recordings hooked up and show notes and then posting to other sites. And there is a lot of stuff that goes on, and he has done such an awesome job for such a long time. And, you know, far longer. I'm kind of the new kid on the block. So, I have barely gotten to know a lot of you in the chat room. I barely got to know Grimner. And but what an awesome kind of situation he put together for Real Liberty Media. I've had a chance to have some discussions with him on text. I'm trying not to like bother him really. With the stuff that's going on with him. So, but we've had some exchanges, some here in the chat room, some in a private room. And, God, what a great guy. And it kind of reminds me of, sorry to get religious a tiny bit, but I'm going to tell you, it kind of reminds me of this thing in the Bible that says, you know, there's no greater love. Sorry. Yeah, maybe I can't do it. let's just say, I have offered to help out. And, you know, this is it's kind of a great time for Real Liberty Media, and it's kind of a really tough time for Real Liberty Media. So, Vincent asked me to make a couple kind of brief announcements today. And I guess the main one is, I think before I get into the announcement, I just want to read you guys something. No, Moose Girl, that's me. It's not the audio cutting in and out. That's actually me being a little emotional here. Okay. So I'm going to kind of read this first, and then we'll get on to the announcement thing. I looked up some definitions, not that you guys need it, but I thought maybe to put Real Liberty Media in perspective. So I looked up the three words, Real Liberty Media. And this is what it says, you know, depending on, you know, what source you use, of course. But let's just use some of these. Real means actually existing or happening, not imaginary. The movie is based on real events. The detective Sherlock Holmes is not a real person. It means not fake, false, or artificial. It's like you could use genuine leather is real, or a real diamond versus, you know, one made in a lab or whatever. It also says important and deserving to be regarded or treated in a serious way. This is a very real problem, danger, or concern. They have avoided talking about the real issues, or there is no real reason to worry. And then liberty, the essential meaning of liberty, the state or condition of people who are able to act and speak freely, like freedom, a nation that values liberty and democracy, soldiers willing to die in defense of liberty, also the power to do or choose what you want to do. They gave him liberty to handle the problem himself. Or it's a political right, hard-won liberties such as freedom of the press or personal liberties. And then media, very briefly, it's the means of communication as radio and television, newspapers, magazines, and internet that reach or influence people widely. Like I said in the beginning, Grimner has had this site for a long time. And man, he's had shows on here that goes back a long ways. A lot of you guys in the chat room, a lot of you guys listening now have had shows have had shows here on Real Liberty Media. They've had great personalities and great information. Looking back on some of the old podcasts I listen to when I get time, it's amazing the information that is passed through this medium. So, Grimner has handed over the reins of Real Liberty Media to Vincent. Vin E, as you know him in chat. Or maybe other, you may know him in other terms in chat, I don't know. But I've had a chance to get to talk to Vincent a few times in the last week. Like I said in the beginning, I offered my help because it's a very transitional time for Real Liberty Media. You know, and I'm really, I had no idea that my emotions would kind of take over when I started talking about this, so I'm sorry. It's just a thing, man. Real Liberty Media is an awesome site, and it's been kept up, and I think the goal is, and you'll hear from Vincent tomorrow, the goal is to keep it going and to grow it, you know, to make it a place where people come for real information, where people come for the truth, to get beyond the freaking headlines and the hype that they're, you know, fed day and night through mainstream media, which, you know, I can't believe how many times I've watched these news reports, and you could basically take any freaking topic that is like breaking news, and you see the exact same words being used on every single mainstream outlet. And it's like they can't think for themselves, or they choose not to, or they're not allowed to, you know, give their own opinion. It's all got to fit in this kind of paraphrased script that they're handed. And that's not what Real Liberty Media is. Real Liberty Media is where people come to talk about the truth, and people share the truth. People dig deep and find information that you just aren't going to see in passing every day. You know, that like in your exchanges with other people, unless you're fortunate enough to be surrounded by people who are like-minded, you know, so that you can talk about this stuff and not get the, you know, the duck eye stare or something like that. You know, this is a different kind of site, and Grimner has kept it going for so long. And I know Vinny is, he's an amazing human being. He is going to be asking, I think, people with special skills or desires or people who want a certain position to help keep this site going and shows going and information flowing and, you know, make this a place where people come to learn differently maybe than they have been taught up to this point. I think I'm a great example. I came here as a conservative, political interest human being. That was what, 8 months ago, somewhere between 8 and 10 months ago, I started hanging out here at Real Liberty Media. And just since then, you know, my views about what I thought was liberty before has totally changed. So now I'm thinking, and I've probably said several times in my past shows, I think more people are going to be looking for the real information in the world. I think people are getting tired of being lied to. I actually saw somebody in the chat room posted earlier today, or maybe it was last night, I don't know. There was a representative from Wisconsin, Colin Fauci, out, and I was like, wow, finally, another one. And, you know, from Wisconsin, too, it was kind of great seeing, you know, another person kind of hitting the stage with like, hey, we're tired of Fauci's lies. And somebody, you know, and that person, that representative from Wisconsin was like, you know, you probably don't know this information because it's not out there in the mainstream media. And he held up cards. He put these giant cards up on a like a whiteboard stand, you know, with the data right on it. And what was awesome about it, he basically said, you know that this would be banned on YouTube. He said, you know this is probably going to get canceled. It's probably not going to show up in mainstream media. But these facts right here on the board, these are facts. This isn't, you know, fake news. I'm not standing up here lying to you about this. These are the statistics right here in black and white. And fortunately, he did use black and white. I think people are getting tired. And I think people don't know what to do. And they're going to be looking for information. And I think this is going to be a great site for people to come and get information. And I don't mean me necessarily. I have my own kind of interests, although my interests are changing. I did want to kind of let you guys know that I'm kind of picking a new direction also. Because here's the deal. I could, and I probably will in some way, continue to pound Fauci until he's gone. But there's so much else going on in the world. There's so many other people who have had their rights violated, who are probably, you know, imprisoned under false pretenses. True Patriots. I just received the book this week. Oh my goodness, I don't have it here. the American Patriot book, Cliven Bundy, and I started reading it. And I mean, I live in Oregon, so I was aware of this whole thing going on. But did I know the truth? Did I know the facts? No, I didn't know the truth and the facts. Although, I'll be honest with you guys, when it was going on, I was thinking, I am going to go join those guys and stand with them. And I didn't. And I kind of wish I would have. It's kind of like I was saying last week about, I think it was last week, it might have been the week before, about Rittenhouse. And that is, I mean, at least the kid did something. You know, at least he actually did something. He didn't just sit at home and let things happen. I don't really think that he went out to kill people. I honestly don't believe that for one second. I think he just is a young kid who was like, man, my brothers need help, and I'm going to go help my brothers, whatever it is they need. And for those of you who don't know all the things that he did before those shootings happened, you should go and listen to the trial and hear what actually happened and what he actually did for hours before that those events took place. Damn it. I wanted to go back. I wanted to say at the very beginning, holy cow, on the storms that ravaged part of our country last night. My jaw literally just hung open for minutes when I turned on the TV, actually before I turned on the TV, the Weather Channel, somebody posted a video that was on Twitter. It was like a 20-second video. What town was that? Can somebody help me out? It was started with an M. I forget. But anyway, the video, it kind of reminded me of when I... Mayfield, Kentucky, thank you. It kind of reminded me of Hurricane Andrew, which I lived through back in whatever year that was, 91 or 92. And I came out of my house after the hurricane eye had passed and the other wall had passed. And I stepped out of my house and I look and everything's flat. It's just flat, like flat. And I was like, oh my God. And that was only one town or city or village or whatever you want to call it. That was only one in the path of those storms. And there were plenty more tornadoes. So, and what a horrible time of year for that to happen. I know it's a really unusual time of year for that to happen. And I know... at least I'm hearing that it was pretty much a freak storm, that I thought I saw somewhere that a tornado stayed on the ground for like 200 miles or something. That I've never heard of something like that before. But, you know, so my thoughts and prayers are going out to those people. I can't go help them physically, but somehow financially I'm going to provide some support in whatever way I can, you know, somewhere where it gets the, you know, makes the biggest impact. Because I know sometimes you contribute to some of these organizations and only a certain percentage of it actually goes to helping out. So I'll be looking for some of those areas. Yeah, St. Jude's is probably good. Anyway, I know you guys all probably feel pretty much the same. You know, when it's all said and done, we're all here. We're all people. We're all human beings. You know, we all celebrate and suffer the same pretty much. So, man, that's going to be, it's going to be some rough holidays for, you know, a lot of those people. Anyway, what I was kind of getting at, I was talking about Fauci and, you know, where my, where my interests, I think my interests are going to change a little bit. I'm never going to get off Fauci, I can tell you that, but I'm not going to spend so much time each episode talking about him. I mean, he's one person who's done the most damage to freedom in not only the United States, but in the entire world, I think. And he's a creep, and he's killed plenty of animals and people, and I just can't stand him. But there's a lot of other stuff going on. There's a lot of stuff going on, good and bad. You know, like I said, there's people in prison who shouldn't be in prison, but they're in prison because of, I don't know, political issues, because of old boy networks, because if they were out and spoke the truth, you know, some officials would fry for it or be, you know, locked up or punished or whatever, who knows what. But there's a lot of good stuff going on in the world, and I'd like to focus on some of those stories every week. Maybe, you know, maybe a story a week, just, you know, added into whatever else it is I'm talking about. Let me kind of review my notes, because I know Vinny just had a couple things for me to talk about. So anyway, I did tell you about the transfer of Real Liberty Media to Vinny. He has been in the chat room more recently, so you guys can see him. If you have any questions, man, fire it off to him. If you have any desires, or if you have skills especially that you think would be handy, you know, let him know. Let him know that you would want to do something, or that you want to do something, you know, big or small. I think, you know, this is kind of your home too, you know. It's, you know, like I said, I'm like the newest guy here. I think it's an honor to be asked to do some things, like for Grimner and for Vinny both. You know, and like I said, I'll do whatever I can to help out, whatever that is. So, well, that was a long half hour. Okay, so let's see. So looking in notes, chat room, it doesn't look like anybody had any questions right now. But remember, 2 p.m. Eastern time tomorrow, there'll be a live show, and Vinny will be on there. I know he's got some stuff he wants to talk about. Anyway, live show tomorrow, that'll be cool. Okay, so for a couple weeks, I've been wanting to tell you guys about, I think if that's it for that news. Yeah, I think it is. Double check here. Yep. I wanted to talk about this, the opioid overdose deaths. And the reason I wanted to bring it up is because I kind of wanted to talk about my own personal experiences with being a provider and having the ability to write those prescriptions, and how opioid kind of control has affected my ability to practice over the years. And I'm going to tell you how different that has been. But originally, I kind of went into this idea because I keep seeing these headlines that the opioid overdose deaths have increased so much in the, you know, during the pandemic. And I was like, okay, why? I mean, how does that happen? It's not like people had more money to buy opiates, I don't think. Or it's not like, you know, doctors were just going to write greater prescriptions because we're in a pandemic. I mean, hell, you were lucky if you could get in to see a doctor for some serious things. And some things that probably required, you know, some opiates, synthetic or real. Hang on, drink time. But anyway, I could not really kind of find an answer to why there's so many more opioid overdose deaths. And I think there was some discussion about, you know, opioid opioids are being, you know, it's not all just what doctors prescribe that is out there killing people. Apparently, you know, there's a huge trade in synthetic opioids that come across the border, and sometimes they are laced with something else, and sometimes people just take them with something else. And I forget the one thing that they're taking it with now, because when I started getting into the story and I was realizing there's not really a good answer, I kind of blew off a lot of stuff because I just kind of wanted to tell you like what my experience has been as a dentist over the past almost 40 years. Jesus, that's a long time. When I started this, I was like, oh, I'll be a dentist for like 20 years and then I'll call it quits. Well, that's gone on way too long. Yeah, Beth, as a matter of fact, a lot of stuff comes in from China. Actually, what happens is, I do know this part, I actually did a show on it months ago. So China sends their kind of precursors to Mexico. Mexico kind of refines or reprocesses it and then moves it across the border. So, but I'm sure probably things come in directly from China too. Okay, but I wanted to kind of give you my own personal experience with pain control as a dentist. Now, you guys don't know my entire history of being a dentist, but you'll have an idea when I'm done today what my career has looked like. So basically, when I got out of dental school, for reasons that will make sense eventually, I don't know if I'll get into it too much now, but basically I went into the U.S. Public Health Service, which is a uniformed service, and I took a commission in the U.S. Public Health Service and went to work in the Bureau of Prisons. Now, listen, the Bureau of Prisons doesn't really care that if you're an inmate that you have pain. They, as a matter of fact, I can tell you that as a healthcare worker in the Bureau of Prisons, you are actually kind of frowned upon because you help inmates. And that whole correctional mindset in the Bureau of Prisons is very anti-be friendly to inmates. And if you're relieving an inmate's pain by, you know, doing a filling or draining an abscess or extracting a tooth or whatever, you're actually kind of babying an inmate. And, you know, all that correctional staff that's there to make sure inmates stay inside, they just look at you as like some kind of outsider. And I mean, that's kind of like throughout the Bureau of Prisons. As an example, I will tell you, as a dentist in the Bureau of Prisons, I generally never had a real dental assistant. If I wanted a dental assistant, I had to basically bring in an inmate and train him how to do a dental assisting, which actually worked out pretty good in the long run. But just to give you an idea, it's not like the Bureau of Prisons spends a lot of money on hiring medical staff. As a matter of fact, they try and keep that money to a minimum. But what I was saying is, so in the Bureau of Prisons, it's virtually impossible to write a prescription for an opiate. So, you know, a guy would come in to sick call in the morning, you know, and he'd sign up because he had a toothache, and then I would do an evaluation, get an x-ray, and be like, yep, you know, your tooth is shot, it's going to have to go, we're going to, you know, numb you up and take that tooth out. And then when I'm done, basically, you're going to get 600 milligram Motrin for a couple days because 600 milligram Motrin is easier to write a prescription for in the Bureau of Prisons than, you know, anything else. Like if I wrote a prescription for a narcotic, oh my God, you wouldn't believe, number one, the hassle that I would get from the pharmacy and the pharmacy tech, who are also, you know, medical staff inside the Bureau of Prisons. But even they just like frowned upon having, you know, an opioid prescription written. So from, let's see, 1989 until 2005 when I retired from the Bureau of Prisons, or I should say from the U.S. Public Health Service, because that's another thing. See, I wasn't really a Bureau of Prisons employee. I was a U.S. Public Health Service employee assigned to work in the Bureau of Prisons. So from 89 to 2005, I never wrote a prescription. I remember one guy broke his jaw. No, I think two guys in my entire career broke their jaws and probably had to go outside for, obviously, I mean, it's not like I'm going to set their jaw, especially back then. I was pretty young and probably didn't know how to do it. I mean, I do now, but I still wouldn't do it. Anyway, I think two guys broke their jaws, and I put them on opioids, and I'm not kidding. It was like the most ridiculous thing in the world, trying to keep those people out of pain, even for just a couple days. Kind of, you know how it is when you like break a bone or have some serious injury. You know, it's like, you know, for a day or two, the pain is like horrific, and then it kind of eases up. You know, like make it a little more tolerable. Anyway, so the couple times I did write prescriptions, it taught me that I was never going to do that again. So however many years that was, I guess it was like 16, I don't know, 14, whatever it was, 15 years, something like that. I only wrote prescriptions for ibuprofen. That was it. And believe it or not, I mean, inmates kind of like knew. They kind of knew already, like, crap, my tooth is toast. I'm going to have my tooth taken out, and then I'm going to get some Motrin. It's like, okay. So they didn't really complain much. I mean, they really didn't. I got to tell you, honestly, inmates were pretty grateful when they got to see me as a dentist inside the Bureau of Prisons. I also had a pretty good reputation. I mean, even when I went from one prison to another prison, you know, you have to kind of transfer to gain rank and, you know, make your, so you retire at a higher rank. You have to take on bigger responsibilities, which meant going to bigger prisons or more complex prisons or whatever. And I was actually show up at a prison, and of course they transfer inmates all the time, all over the place. And people would already know that, you know, I was going to treat them fairly, and I was going to do the right thing, whatever the right thing was, within the limits of the Bureau of Prisons. And I've always done that. You know, fortunately, I mean, that's one thing about public health service that I keep harping about, you know, with, you know, the current, you know, just the government being involved in public health service at all. Is, you know, people think it's awesome until they get in it. Once they get into a service, I'm talking about the service side or the patient side of public health service, when you find out that there just isn't enough supply, whether it be in personnel or in product, you're just stuck with whatever it is that system has to offer. Like, if they don't have a heart surgeon, guess what? You got a bad heart. Oh, well, too bad. We don't have a heart surgeon. and yeah, it's that bad. It is that bad in play. I think it's kind of funny, sort of funny, when people get on the state, you know, dental system, which is kind of what I do now. 50% of my patients are on the state, you know, insurance plan. And they ask me, you know, well, I'm going to lose this tooth. Can I get an implant? You know, I mean, I don't tell them no, they can't get an implant. I let my assistants tell them. But it's kind of surprising that people don't understand that you're not getting everything. Like, your insurance doesn't, even paid insurance doesn't pay everything. You know, even if you have an awesome insurance plan, you're still going to be stuck paying for some of it. But people think that, you know, all of their care is going to be covered forever. And that's just not going to be the case. So, you know, they're kind of surprised when a certain service isn't going to be covered. So I went from the Bureau of Prisons in 2005 into kind of a, well, this would be a corporate setting. In other words, some, they call them dental service organizations. They own multiple clinics, and then you're just basically a staff member. They pay you to come in and do work, and you go home, which was awesome because I basically went to work and did my work and went home, and somebody paid me, and I was like, that's awesome. I don't have to worry about personnel. I don't have to worry about, you know, payroll. I don't have to worry about anything. Somebody else is handling that. I just get to do dentistry, and that was awesome. Now, in that system, because I had already come out of about 15 or 16 years of writing patients only ibuprofen, I was like, you know, when I got done doing extractions, I would tell people, I'm just going to give you a 600 milligram Motrin because it's a non-opioid and the DEA didn't ever hassle me and basically nobody ever hassled me. But, I mean, there would be a few times when I would be like, ooh, these people have breakthrough pain, man. I'm going to give them something. So I would give them like a couple days of opioids. And by a couple days, I literally mean 2 days. And once in a great while, 3 days, if I really thought they were going to need that third day. And, you know, that seemed to work fine. You know, mostly people didn't complain. And I got to tell you, it is so easy to figure out the ones who are looking for pain medicine that it's not even funny. I mean, it is kind of funny. You kind of actually kind of laugh inside your head when you run into those people because it's just so flippin' obvious. They know exactly what they want. They know the name of what they want, not just the generic name. They know exactly what percentage, how many milligrams, you know, how many tablets. anyway, easy to spot. Once in a great while, someone will trick me. But really, at this point, they don't trick me anymore. Mainly because, you know, I have a, you know, GNF attitude about it. Like, I would rather somebody else be in pain than the DEA contact me. And that's actually kind of what I'm getting at with this whole kind of story. Is, you know, so the population, whatever population, however you want to divide it or assign it or whatever, there's a population out there that has caused this issue where people are accusing doctors of making them addicted to opiates, right? So then doctors start putting restrictions on how many opiates they give out, opioids. So I wanted to tell you kind of the next phase of my professional life was, so in 2013, I opened a practice that was only, it was only extractions, dentures, and implants. Now, after a few months, when that practice really started going, I would see 3 surgery patients a day, one at like 10:30 in the morning, one at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and one at 2:30 in the afternoon. And that was so I could take out all of their teeth and put in dentures, or take out all of their teeth and put in some implants and then dentures, or take out, you know, whatever procedure I was doing, right? Those patients, now listen to this. So in the morning, when I would see these patients for their pre-op, I would give them a steroid that was gonna, that they were going to take for 3 days. They take 2 tablets the first day, 2 tablets the second day, and 1 tablet the third day. I would give them an antibiotic that they would take for 7 days, right? And I would give them, and I expect the DEA is going to come knocking on my door probably Monday, I would give them 40 oxycodone or hydrocodone tablets, 40, without question, because I was going to cause them a crap ton of pain. I mean, some of these people, I was actually going to remove some bone. Some of these people, I actually had to remove these growths called tori. I had to actually drill bone and remove it so that a denture would fit. Or I had to put implants in bone. Or just the fact that I was taking out so many teeth. Some of these people I took 28 teeth out of. And they were going to have significant pain. Although, if you notice, I said I would give them a steroid. And one thing about steroids is they reduce post-operative swelling. So I actually kind of cheated the system a little bit by reducing the amount of swelling that they would have post-operatively, which means that less swelling, less pain. And the other thing is about a systemic steroid is my patients would come in the day after their surgery and tell me that they felt so great. And they didn't understand why. And I would never tell them, it's because I gave you that steroid. But those steroids, kind of incredible, really help reduce with post-operative pain and swelling. Very helpful anyway. For 5 years, I was given out, you know, with those three patients a day, 120 opioids. So now, did I actually had one patient in that 5 years who I knew was working me, but she knew just exactly what to say and how to act that I could not say she wasn't having pain. And so she probably got a few more prescriptions than I was comfortable with. And I finally ended up sending her to somebody else to evaluate her pain to see if they could figure out what it was, because I couldn't. And I was tired of writing that prescription. And it wasn't like every 3 days. I mean, she would come back maybe once a month, every 6 weeks or something. And yeah, it was terrible. Okay, so that was this period in my life when I was doing a ton of surgery. And people needed to be out of pain. That was one thing. I needed these people to have a good experience because, number one, now listen, it's kind of weird that you would actually, you know, use drugs to help your practice grow. But I can tell you this. Let's say the first few months I was in practice, and I gave those patients Motrin or ibuprofen and no steroid and no antibiotic. Do you know how many people would be telling their friends, oh my God, that was the worst pain I've ever had? Like, I can't believe how much pain I was in for days. Or, you know, that doc, you know, he did really good work, but gosh, it just hurt so bad, you know. And, you know, if you're in a private practice where you're the one who, everything depends on what you do. Like, if you're successful, if you want people to spread the word, you want them to have a good experience. Now, of course, I'm not hooking them up to nitrous and having a party with them or anything like that. But I'm providing as much comfort as I can once they leave my office that they're going to tell other people, oh, yeah, I mean, it sucks having all your teeth taken out, and it sucks, you know, having dentures made or whatever it was they were in for. But, you know, it really wasn't that bad. You know, I actually was sore for a day or maybe two, but actually it wasn't that bad. And, you know, that's just kind of part of doing business is, you know, so like what I'm what I was trying to say is, I probably gave more opioids in private practice than was necessary. I would be willing to bet you. So if you figure I gave 40 tablets and you could take, I know this sounds kind of crazy, you could take between 4 and 8 a day. Basically, you know, that's a week or two worth of opioids. And I'd be willing to bet you, in fact, my patients would come back and tell me that, I took like 3 or 4 of those and, you know, I got rid of the rest or whatever. I don't remember anybody coming back to me like, hey, I took all 40 of those and I'm still having pain. That would be, I can't even remember one single patient telling me they ran out of, oxy or hydrocodone. Which, you know, I mean, it worked out pretty good for me, I guess. Because, you know, if your patients are comfortable, they are also not going to call you unless there's something wrong. You know, I'll give you one example. I saw a registered nurse one time, and I had to do an extraction, and I did an extraction. And, I mean, sometimes I just did extractions. Sometimes people just came in because I did extractions for $90, and they didn't need dentures, and they didn't need all their teeth pulled. They just had one tooth that needed to go, right? So I saw this one registered nurse. She was about my age at the time, probably 50, I don't know. And I extracted her tooth, you know, same thing, gave her a prescription for pain meds. She didn't need antibiotics. She tells me the next day she actually like bled excessively. And this wasn't a tooth in an area where you have to worry about blood vessels or anything, but she just was one of those people who, and she's a nurse. Like she knew her nail beds were actually turning blue because she had lost enough blood that, you know, it was kind of a serious deal. But like mostly post-op pain, I'd never, nobody would ever call me because they were having pain, you know, because they had plenty of oxycodone or hydrocodone, and they had antibiotics and they had that steroid. So they were pretty comfortable. And I mean, that's what you're looking for, is for your patients to be comfortable. Now, I gave up that practice in 2018. Well, the end of 17, beginning of 18. And, you know, back in another corporate office, and I have half of my patients are private pay, and half are, I should say, private payer insurance, and half are the state insurance program. I treat them all pretty much the same, like they all don't get any pain meds. I'm kidding. I do give pain meds, but it's also a very limited number. And the reason is because, like, you know, you have the local AMA, American Medical Association, you know, and the local American Dental Association, and then the local social entities, whatever they are, you know, who take care of homeless people or take care of people with addictions. And they have these meetings and they're like begging practitioners not to let so many opioids out on the street. And here's the thing. So let's say, like, if I did an extraction in my clinic, I can tell you, I've had even worse than this happen. In fact, I'll tell you exactly what happened. I wrote a prescription one time for Percocet, and it was 5 slant 325 Percocet, dispense 12, 1 or 2 tabs Q6H. No, I said QID every 4 times a day. The pharmacist literally called me and he says, we cannot fill this prescription like this. And I was like, what? And I was like, what did I do? Like, I'm thinking I did something stupid, like wrote, you know, 400 or, you know, 1,200 or 120 or something stupid. He says, well, you said four times a day. And it has to say every 6 hours, number one. And number two is, we can't let them have two Percocets every 6 hours. Now, that was my standard prescription at the implant denture clinic, was one or two tablets Q6H. But then, you know, it kind of changed between, you know, 2017 and 2019 and, you know, the, you know, kind of opioids in general. You know, there was more and more opioid overdose deaths. And, you know, everybody started cracking down on it. So the pharmacists would call you, their primary care physicians would, you know, call you and be like, hey, how come you're giving, you know, your patient this, you know, our mutual patient this much pain med? And, you know, like, personally, I don't like being on the phone. I don't like talking to people that much. Sounds kind of funny. I'm doing this show, but I guess I'm really not talking with people. When I'm doing the show, I'm kind of the solo monologue here. But I don't want to hear from another doc. I don't want to hear from a primary care physician. I want to hear from a pharmacist or a pharmacy tech. I just don't want to spend the time like, oh, okay, we'll straighten that out, you know, right away. So, you know, you kind of get trained into, you know, obeying the local rules. And what I'm trying to get to the bottom of is this. Do you think any of my patients became addicted because I gave them, what, 10 days worth of Percocet or Norco or Vicodin? I don't know. I've never had anybody come back to me and be like, oh, doc, you got me addicted to opioids. You know, or I've never had one of my patients be like, oh, yeah, I entered treatment to get, you know, off of those opioids you got me started on. So, anyway, I think that's it. I wanted to kind of just share that story with you because I'd been thinking about it for a long time. And, you know, I would like, if somebody has the answer to why there's so many opioid overdose deaths now, I kind of have a feeling it's a combination of things, you know, and we probably aren't going to get to the bottom of it anytime soon because, you know, so many things just went horrifically wrong with this pandemic, plandemic. We're just not going to get to the bottom of it. It looks like I'm running out of time here. I'm just going to end with this one thought from the Titleist company, because I thought this was awesome. Titleist says you cannot have Let's Go Brandon stamped on your Titleist golf ball, because it doesn't, it goes against with what they believe. But you can have Kill Trump put on your Titleist golf ball. And that'll be it for today. Remember, catch us tomorrow, 2 p.m. Eastern time. Thanks, you guys, for joining me. I really do appreciate it. You all stay safe. And let's do this.